Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
On Tuesday, leaders from the Democratic Party were at the White House meeting with President Trump about our country's infrastructure. And yes, Infrastructure Week has become something of a running joke, but Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer emerged from their meeting with smiles after coming to an agreement over a $2 trillion deal. The size of that package calls back to other massive infrastructure investments like the New Deal during the Great Depression. Now, history tends to look back fondly on the New Deal, but our next guests say that infrastructure spending has actually helped cement inequality in the United States, particularly when it comes to race. Joining me now is Adam Serwer, a staff writer at The Atlantic, who's currently a fellow at the Shorenstein Center at Harvard University. And Andrea Flynn is a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, a progressive economic think tank. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for having us.
Adam, let's start with you. Your initial thoughts on the politics of this deal. I mean, does it make sense for the Democrats to make a deal with the president this large now?
Well, I think it's a little strange for the Democratic Party to be saying, on the one hand, the president's a crook, and on the other hand, we want to give him $2 trillion for infrastructure. That $2 trillion, by the way, is more than twice the number that many Democrats wanted to give Obama at the depth of the recession when he first took office in 2009. So it's a little weird that they have suddenly become so open to the idea of spending this much money on infrastructure. That said, this is the kind of thing that Democratic presidents typically promise to do, and it was one of the reasons for Donald Trump's crossover appeal in 2016. And I think if the Democrats actually somehow send him a bill and it somehow gets past the Republicans in the Senate, it's going to be very good for Donald Trump and probably not that good for the Democratic Party.
And Andrea, the New Deal, as we mentioned at the top, and Adam, you've also said that this is on Twitter, you said this moment is sort of a throwback to the passage of that New Deal. Andrea, New Deal was seen often as transformational, but who were really the beneficiaries of that investment?
Yeah, that's right. We do have fond sort of collective memories of the New Deal, but actually what we saw is that the New Deal was this incredible passageway to the middle class, mostly for white Americans. And actually, there were very intentional barriers erected through the New Deal that made it very difficult for Black Americans to enjoy those same protections. And some of that was through sort of regular employment discrimination. So in the first 100 days of FDR's administration, through the Works Progress Administration and the Conservation Corps, what we saw is that most of those jobs went to white men and that Black employment rates remained very, very high. And then there were other mechanisms that were really sort of compromises that FDR made as a way to get the New Deal passed that really excluded Black Americans. So the Social Security Act and the Fair Labor Standards Act both excluded agricultural workers and domestic workers. And because of the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow, the majority of those workers were Black Americans. And so what we saw is that some of the most important provisions of the New Deal, retirement security and worker protections, were not actually extended to Black workers.
So, Andrea, let's talk about the legacy of the inequities that you just laid out. How are we still living with many of the choices that the government made back in the 1930s?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think one of the clearest pieces of evidence that we have of the legacy of sort of historical policies is the racial wealth gap. Because of the practices of redlining that started around the time of the New Deal, and also because of the fact that very few GI Bill loans went to families of color, what we saw is that housing growth really expanded in the suburbs for white communities, while inner city neighborhoods were really denied those kind of loans that allowed them to become homeowners. And of course, at the same time, public spending was sort of going to those newer suburban neighborhoods and being taken away from the inner city neighborhoods. And what this really did was not only sort of cement segregation along geographic lines, but what it did was really seed these major wealth divisions that we see today.
Adam, I mentioned earlier that you tweeted about how this deal with the president is sort of a throwback to the passage of the New Deal. What is the Trump administration really trying to do when they're passing this bill? Are they trying to win over a certain group of people?
I think that, you know, obviously everything's very premature because there's no bill, and it's not clear that if there was a bill, the Republicans who control the Senate would let it through. That said, when you look back at the New Deal at the time, you know, the compromises or the changes to the New Deal legislation that excluded most Black Americans were the result of the fact that the Democrats were heavily reliant on a large segregationist faction in the South. And those Southern segregationists very much wanted to restrict the prosperity of the New Deal only to their white constituents and keep their Black constituents from seeing any gain from that. Now, that didn't actually work. What happened was that a lot of Black Americans saw their lives in the South, saw their lives materially improve. And as a result, they gravitated towards Roosevelt. And that absolutely changed the politics of the country. It changed the course of the nation, because once Democrats became reliant on Black voters, those voters forced the party to make commitments to civil rights and abandon their Southern segregationist constituency. Now, you know, if the Democratic Party of the 1930s and 40s, which had substantial ranks of racist and segregationist politicians and supporters, could change as a result of drawing in these new voters, it's not impossible to imagine that an infrastructure bill of this size could do something similar for the Republican Party.
And Andrea, we've talked a little bit just earlier about the racial implications of the New Deal. If this infrastructure package were to pass now in the future, what can be done or what should be written in it to make sure that the same racial inequities do not get played out?
Yeah, I think this is a really critical question. And I think there are a few things that we need to be asking. One is, how can a package of this size be both universal and targeted? So how can it benefit all communities that need to be experiencing the benefits of something like this? But how can we also target a package like this so that it is really squarely addressing neighborhoods that have been historically neglected and harmed? Another critical question is, how can we make this workforce more inclusive? These are good jobs, good, stable, steady jobs at a time when those kind of jobs are going away very quickly. You know, when we think of infrastructure jobs, we often think about men in hard hats. But actually, what we know is that lots of women have these jobs too. And in fact, more women could and should have these jobs. So when we're creating policies on infrastructure, I'm really interested in what kind of mechanisms can we bake into those policies to make sure that we're recruiting and training women and that we're creating job protections that make those jobs attractive, safe, and welcoming to women.
I just saw my first men and women at work sign recently. So there are times they are changing. Andrea Flynn is a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute, and Adam Serwer is a staff writer at The Atlantic, currently on leave as a fellow at the Shorenstein Center at Harvard University. I appreciate you both coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.